We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to In the Know. This is Shemit, and I'm joined by Mason. We are kicking off the first episode post the great Ryan Schwan and Michael McNamara. What's up, Mason?
Not too much. Looking forward to getting started. Number one of hopefully many. I'm not sure about as many as Mike and Ryan did, but hopefully a decent amount. And looking forward to doing the best we can to fill their shoes. It's going to be incredibly difficult to do so, but we'll see how things go.
Yeah, like right off the bat, we are up against a challenge trying to fill their shoes, but definitely going to do our best. So without further ado, Mason, I know you have been totally invested in this draft process from day one. What do you make of the 51st pick, Tony Carr?
Feels fine, I guess. that's pretty much what you should be saying about the 51st pick, I think. So I likely they had a guy who they've been targeting, or they may have had a couple guys who they were hoping fell, and if they didn't fall, they had a guy who they thought was the safe pick who they could take and be happy with. And I'm assuming that's what Tony Carr was. So I haven't done a lot of scouting on him, obviously, but looking at some of his college numbers, seems like a guy who the one thing I said is it seems like he kind of duplicates some of the skill sets the Pelicans backcourt players currently have.
He said his player comp is Drew Holiday. To which, when Dell was asked the same thing, Dell laughed for a good 5 seconds.
That's right. You were there. So, yeah, I'll defer to you on the commentary from Demps. But that's, yeah, that should tell you all you need to know. It's a guy who, you know, hopefully he makes the team. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But I'm sure the Pelicans like a couple of things they saw in him. And so, you know, we're looking forward to seeing him in summer league play.
Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, at 51, the chance that you get a guy that contributes in any meaningful way are probably slim to none. So I'm not going to hold my breath on this. But if he ends up being something nice, then, hey, more power to him and great for the Pelicans. Here's a question for you, though. Who do you think plays an NBA minute first? Tony Carr, and I'm not talking preseason. I'm talking, we'll include garbage time in this, but not preseason. Okay. Tony Carr or some random European player slash wing that we might bring over this summer?
So it's funny because I know we talked about this a little bit before the draft, and I think my answer, given the player the Pelicans took, has changed, and I think you're gonna, I think you're gonna like it because
it changes once there's a name to the pick.
No, it's not the name; it's the position. Okay. In the depth chart. So if had we taken some, let's say like a 4-year wing or a guy who's probably gonna play the 3 through the 5 more likely than the 1 or 2, I think I would have gone with random pick, the draft pick. But with taking another guard, I don't know where he gets the minutes. I just don't. And I understand that that's the guy they wanted. You're not drafting at the 51st pick to help you this season. Like that's probably a little too ambitious. So given the fact that we took a guard, I think I would go with a random EuroLeague guy that Dell Demps is inevitably going to sign, because that's just what he does. So I'll go there.
But there's some versatility to Tony Carr. He's about 6'5". He can pass the ball. He's bigger than Etuan Moore.
I feel like you're doing some sort of reverse psychology thing on me right now, and it's not going to work.
Okay, stick to your guns. I feel like I'm in the same boat as you. I think there will be a random European player, X, that'll come in like Darius Miller, and he'll be given a fair shake before they decide if he is a contributor that's going to stick around or, you know, if he's shown the boot. But I think European players, it's tough. It's tough to scout them. I know that Demps and the front office staff have invested a fair amount in scouting European players in years past. You can tell by the players that he's brought in with Luke Babbitt and Alexei Ejinsa and Darius Miller. So we've definitely seen Demps go the European route in the past before, and I know that they have a few scouts overseas, and Demps makes a couple trips overseas every year. And I think this year it was reported that Dell went to watch the Final Four of EuroLeague. So that was pretty cool. I think he was like one of 2 or 3 GMs that actually made the trip over.
Yeah, he bounced like the combine out there. I think that's what it was. Just like it was, because it would have been very difficult based on timing to do both, but possible if you really wanted to. And so it was kudos to Dell for making both those work.
Yeah, absolutely. So it makes you wonder, you know, who he was out there scouting and if anything materialized. But again, an issue with trying to bring someone over from Europe is, one, they have to want the NBA first. And that's not always the case, because a lot of European players in their respective clubs make good money. You know, they might be making anywhere from 1 to 3 million euros a year, which if you do the conversion rate, I think that comes out to like $1.5 million to...
Yeah, it's a little more.
It's slightly more. And so they're making good money. They're making a little bit over the vet min, or right at the vet min, to more. And the issue is their tax rates there. I've heard that their clubs basically pay all the taxes, so the players don't. So a lot of that income is just going straight to them. Plus, the clubs take care of the players really well. They provide them with housing, they provide them with cars, they provide them with meals, and everything. So, like, these players are stars there. They get starting level minutes. They're making good money. So in order for them to want the NBA, and you're asking them to make vet min in, you know, a 35 to 40% tax bracket, and so they're already losing money there, and with no guarantee of minutes, and oftentimes no guarantee of the contract. A lot of these guys have non-guaranteed contracts. We've seen partial guarantees in the Darius Miller contract. And so you're asking them to give up a lot of financial security to come over into a league where they might not even be successful. And that just doesn't work for a lot of guys. So,
yeah, it's funny you mentioned that in the Darius Miller context, because I know, you know, I for one, and some others too, were very – skeptical. You can argue about which of the Pelicans' single decisions put them into a hard cap situation. Obviously, there are a bunch of different factors that go into that. but there's a decent case to be made that Darius Miller was the thing that triggered it. And so that contract, and like, why can't we just give him the minimum? And we're not paying him that much more than the minimum anyway. It's, you know, it could be very well be related to what you just spoke about. I mean, it's not just were there other teams in the NBA bidding for Darius Miller? Were the Pelicans not the only team trying to get him? It's what the Pelicans had to offer versus what he was making in Europe and what the lifestyle in Europe. And so it's a great point that I don't think me nor maybe some others thought about at the time. I think it was just NBA team A versus NBA team B who can make the best offer. And that's not always the case.
Right. The quality of life there is extremely high for a lot of these guys. And so when players or when fans look at players who are quote unquote stars, there, like, you know, your Nando DiColos and your Jan Vesely's and, oh my goodness, and your Alexi Shveds. I mean, these guys are really good there, and they may have also gotten better there since they've left the NBA. But these guys make a boatload of money, and they are stars everywhere they go. So those tier of players are likely, like, never coming back. You know, they have no reason to, because, one, they didn't have a great experience in the NBA to begin with. Two, like, they're getting everything they possibly need over there. So it's really tough to bring some of these guys over. And you see some of these issues. I think when Mirotić was first brought over, he got something like a $5-plus million deal a year to go play for Chicago. And that's a pretty pricey deal for a first-year player, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yep. And again, he was a star back in Europe. And so finding
he's a star in New Orleans, too,
he
man.
He's a star in New Orleans. As long as he keeps shaving his beard. I don't know him if he keeps that beard. I refuse to recognize him. So. But it's tough. It's tough finding these guys. And I think the front office has their work cut out for them. Now, I'm not going to pretend I am some EuroLeague expert and I know which players to target. But if you look at the sort of mold of players that the Demps has targeted in the past, they've been sort of NBA outcasts. They have been players who were once in the NBA to some extent. They were drafted by a team. Maybe that team wasn't very good. And they've, you know, found their way out of the league, and they try to make a name for themselves in Europe. And they got an opportunity to work on skills that they wouldn't have had to in the NBA. And they got the necessary minutes to sort of, like, foster that growth. And that kind of, like, checks the box when you look for, like, someone who may want the NBA, someone who may want to come back. And so when you sort of look at some of those type of players, there's not a big, big list of them. But there was one that was potentially intriguing. There is a 6'9 forward, Tyler Honeycutt. He is a wing. Maybe he can play a little bit of the power forward. He played for UCLA. He was drafted by the Kings and played two seasons there, but, like, maybe he played like 10 games per season. So he didn't get very much run with the Kings, and he soon found himself out of the league, and now he plays in a Russian league, I believe. And I was looking at some of his numbers, the good old Draft Express. No, not Draft Express, Basketball Reference. They have a European version of it. And he, you know, he shot really well from three this past year. And he was a really good he's been a really good shot blocker for his whole career. And he also has really good steal rates, and he rebounds the ball decently. And I was scrolling on Twitter, and it seemed like at some point this season Dell was out there scouting his team. Now, to be fair, his team also has European great Alexi Shved on it. But going back to what we talked about with the contracts and the star power, I feel – and just the needs of this team. I mean, how many guards do we have, you know? I
can think of at least one person in New Orleans sports media who would probably prefer Shved. But I hear you. There's definitely differences there when it comes to skill sets and likelihood to come over. So,
I mean, basically, when you look at that roster, there's three players that I figured that maybe Dell could have been looking at. There was Alexi Shved, which I'm a cross off. There was Thomas Robinson, and, you know, he's a big that's been in and out of the NBA. He kind of maybe fits the bill, but I feel like you can.
These are all former Kings outcasts.
Yeah, all former Kings outcasts. Good Lord, oh my gosh. you know, they might be a developmental team for the rest of the NBA. But yeah. In any case, you know, Thomas Robinson, I feel like his skill set can be replaced by a litany of other bigs, right? So when you look at the needs of this team, and if you feel like Dell is going after those Miller types, Honeycutt was the only one that kind of made sense to me. So that is going to be my official prediction, that if we bring over a guy, it's going to be Tyler Honeycutt.
That, I mean, you've invested the research, and it shows, and that, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me. I enjoy looking at that Kings team that he was on as a rookie and seeing all the players that were at one point also played for New Orleans or are in that mold that you mentioned. So, for example, Hassan Whiteside was on that team. And he went to China, I think, after he kind of fizzled out with the Kings and then suddenly came back and got a major contract from Miami. And then other
now
guys.
He's a totally content and happy person in Miami.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how can't you be making $20 million a year? other guys on that team was Tyreke Evans, Jimmer. Can't forget Jimmer, of course. Former Pelican John Salmons.
Good Lord.
Former Hornet. Former Hornet, Marcus Thornton.
I mean, I'm sure you know this, but John Salmons was on the team the year we first made the playoffs with AD. He started that year. Like, he started off being on the team that year, along with Austin Rivers and a bunch of other players.
Just amazing how that works out. But, yeah, and Thornton, too. As many LSU fans will remember those glory days. But yeah,
there's a lot of people that still want him back. He is a fan club.
Yeah, I get it. And
I feel like he's a meme at this point.
he's just, you know, he's just a borderline NBA player at best. Like, he can make shots, but he can't do much else besides that. And he likes to chuck, I will say that. Speaking of, Chuck Hayes was also on that Kings team.
Good Lord.
But yeah,
it's a wonder
pretty,
the Kings didn't make the playoffs with that much talent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we didn't even mention Isaiah Thomas. So, yeah, so much talent. It's just crazy.
Okay, pause. Isaiah Thomas. We're going to change gears for a slight second here. Would you bring in Isaiah Thomas to this team? Yes or no? and we'll talk about the contract in a second, but just a binary. If you had an opportunity to bring him in, would you bring him in?
you've got to consider it just because he does something that not many Pelicans can do, which is get to the rim.
Oh. Get to the rim.
And you get to the rim and actually score. We have not many guys who can create their own look, and Isaiah Thomas can do that. But I mean, once you have to, obviously we have to factor in a bunch of different variables here that make it less likely, But yeah, I mean, if it was binary, like there's a case to be made for it, assuming he's healthy.
Okay, so building upon that, would you offer him more than the taxpayer MLE? So would you hard cap yourself for him?
I don't think so. It's not obvious, but I don't think that I would. But of course, the cost
here is the hard cap, but also potentially another player who could be had for that money.
Yeah, it's opportunity cost, and I'm just not sure. Isaiah Thomas doesn't – I mean, number one, he's got to be healthy, and he, you know, wasn't for most of last year. And then, yeah, and then second, it's what are you passing up on to bring him in? I don't know if – he doesn't really – the reason the Pelicans played so well – well, there are a few reasons, but after Cousins went down was I still think he fits the game plan of how they want to play. I think he just kind of drives a wrench into it. And so I could see him like as an off the bench guy. I feel like he'd be
a decent fit in a Chris Finch offense. If Chris Finch made Jameer Nelson look decent in Denver, Isaiah Thomas could probably be a little bit better.
Yeah. I would pump the brakes on him as a starter. I think off the bench he could make sense, but that being said, like, I don't think a guy off the bench is worth hard capping yourselves for. So I'm probably out on that.
What do you make of his fit with Rajon Rondo, who is a big fan of Isaiah Thomas?
Are they? I didn't even know that.
No, he hates him.
Okay. That seems surprising.
When the Lakers played,
That's right. They had the beef all year long.
Rondo was just trying to target him incessantly, and Isaiah's like, "What did I even do to you, man?" And it's because like the Celtics wanted to retire his jersey. And Rondo's like, "Is this what we celebrate?"
Oh my God, how could I forget that? Yeah, that was that was something. And I think actually now I want to bring him even more
for the comedy. Okay, all right. I would not bring him in. I don't think he's a good fit. Just because I think scoring is somewhat easily replaceable. I don't think the Pelicans had that much of a problem with it. And I think if you bring in Boogie, you probably also won't have a problem with scoring.
Yeah, so, right.
Honestly, if he was Ian Clark's side, I would do it. If he could be an okay one-position defender, I would do it. Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. It's a tough sell for me. Now, if you're like, okay, he wants to come here for biannual money, which is $3.5 million or whatever. All right, cool. I'd do it then. I don't think you're getting anyone better for biannual money. Yeah. So that's my limit, I guess. But beyond that, I'm
I'm with you. And would you if Isaiah was asking for below the taxpayer, Emily, and Rondo wanted more, would you flip him? Would you replace Rondo with Isaiah?
No.
You're thinking about it. You're thinking about it, though.
I don't want it. Can I just say no?
Yeah, sure. Why not? It's probably an unrealistic scenario anyway, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just, yeah. Ugh.
Your point's like, fair, though.
Imagine like having like $8 million tied up in a year, tied up in Rondo and Isaiah Thomas. I just don't want that.
I mean, I don't either. And no, but your point with Boogie's is especially like salient, because if he's back, you offense is not the problem. I mean, we are a top 10 team on offense with Cousins. It was the defense that was more of an issue. So there's just no, I don't see the incremental benefit besides being a guy who can help stay above water on when your stars are on the bench. But yeah, I don't see it.
There's just too much that can go wrong. Just, I feel like they talked about the whole chemistry thing, and then you want to introduce that dynamic in, and then maybe deal with the fact that he probably wants to be a starter because he probably still thinks he's a 29-point-per-game scorer and an all-NBA player that he was in Boston. It's just too much. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm moving on. Enough Isaiah Thomas. We've talked a lot about him. Okay, so question. Speaking of chemistry, do you buy into what we've sort of been hearing, that the team is all about the chemistry and that the team had a lot of success because the guys loved each other and they were going to dinners and the locker room was great, and maybe there's a concern that Boogie mucks that up and they're not entirely sure how to feel about that? Do you feel like that is something that needs to be considered when making the decision on Boogie? Does it keep you from making a decision on Boogie if those things are true? What are your thoughts on that?
So on the court first, I don't really think it's a meaningful factor. Off the court, I think that's the kind of thing that can wear on your team over time. And so while I don't think something like that is going to factor into his I think the way it'll factor into his contract negotiations is, I think it gives the Pelicans yet another reason to be wary about giving him a real long-term deal, as in like a 4 or 5 year deal, because I don't know.
Do you think that the chemistry factors more into the long-term deal, or do the injury factors more into the long-term deal? Because I feel like
injury for sure. Okay. But I think it's just another factor that weighs, because if you think about AD's timeline and when he's going to be up for a new contract, and if you know, that really causes problems in the locker room that we don't see, and it's just one more step that pushes AD out the door. And so, I mean, I think if the Pelicans weren't competing anyway, he'd probably be gone. But the one factor that that kind of makes me hold back is the extension that he can sign with New Orleans, because it's so much money. And I know we see the Kawhi situation right now, and him, you know, trying to get out even before that contract. I know Boogie left Sacramento before he got that contract, but still, I mean, it's enough to make me think that if the team was at least trending in the right direction, he might think about sticking around. But if Boogie signed to a 4 or 5 year max and he's, you know, pissed off the entire locker room by that point, even if the team's doing well, I think if they're a title contender, none of this matters and everything's fine. But if they're, it's just kind of that middle ground. Like if the team's doing well, but not that well, and, you know, Cousins is war in the locker room too much, like, I think it's a problem. And so that's kind of my long-winded answer.
Okay, that's fair enough. And then with that in mind, what's your ideal looking like for ideal deal? Wow, that's a handful. What's your ideal deal looking like for Boogie?
I think ideal is 2 years.
Straight up?
I think, I mean, if we're talking ideal, 2 years with a team option for the third year is perfect, but Boogie's not taking that. So I think 2 years, and if you really get him for 2 years, it's going to be tough to negotiate very far down from max money. And so obviously that would be even better if they could get off of that. But I think I'd rather give him 2 years max than like three at less than max. But it's, you know, it's tricky. I mean, we could know more about his Achilles injury recovery now in a couple months than we do now. But obviously the decision has to be made in a couple weeks. So yeah, I don't know. I think, but two is kind of where I sit.
Okay. So, but consider this: the Mavericks drafted Luka Doncic, yep, and his mom. They drafted Luka Doncic. They did not pick a center. They have a pretty gaping hole at the center position. Dirk is in the twilight of his career and probably doesn't want to stick around for a rebuild. Cuban's always excited about free agents. Do you think they're a threat? I think I saw you tweeting during draft night about the Mavericks drafting Doncic and that being the worst case scenario. Do you want to elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. And I think I'm more bummed about it than other people might be, but it was just a double whammy. Mostly that Boogie is now a much more of a candidate than if they were going to draft Bamba, for example, which is what everyone thought they were going to do if they didn't trade up for Luka. But now not only do you have a need for a center, you also have Doncic in our division for the next 10 years. And so that's, I don't like that very much either. Cause I mean, a lot of people think he was the best player in the draft. As from a Boogie perspective, I think it's almost less about the Mavericks signing him and more about his negotiating leverage going up. So it's, I would like Boogie back on a reasonable contract in a perfect world. But now, you know, if the Mavericks go over the top with some crazy offer and anything 4 years or more at close to the max, I'm saying goodbye, enjoy, because it's too much. It's too much of a risk. And the Pelicans can do some other stuff and make it okay, I think, the summer. But yeah, it's just about his leverage, because I think the recent events, the way it was trending, was Boogie's market was kind of drying up, especially when you consider the fact that if Kawhi had forced his way to LA, and they go get Paul George and LeBron, or even one of them, I don't know if Boogie makes sense in LA. And so now you're left with a Mavericks team that that has Bamba and doesn't really need Boogie, and all of a sudden things kind of get turned on its head, and the Mavericks are now pretty enticing option for Cousins, and that's going to help him when it comes time to negotiate a contract.
I just don't see it. I don't see Cuban talking himself into Boogie and Carlisle. They dealt with Rondo and his shenanigans. They dealt with Nerlens and his shenanigans. And to add another volatile personality like Boogie into the locker room when you have young guys like Dennis Smith and Luka, and those guys need the ball in their hands to operate, to be best. And, you know, to a certain extent, Harrison Barnes does too, but I'm not sure how much of their long-term plans he's a part of. But you want to bring a dominating personality on and off the court into that locker room, I wouldn't. Not at this juncture. I mean, the pick that they gave up to move up in the draft is top five protected. So they could still very well suck the next year and hold on to that pick and draft someone else. Plus, I feel like Cuban is the type to max out Capella just to mess with the Rockets and to see what he can do there. And plus, I think that if DeAndre Jordan opts out of his contract, they're willing to forgive him. I think I saw some reports that they'd be willing to take him back. You and Cuban might not be driving around Houston looking for his number anymore.
What you're saying makes perfect sense. But there are a couple of things. The other free agents are a good point, but they've missed out on so many guys in the recent years that they're trying to go out and get in terms of marquee free agents. So I don't know. At this point, I think they know that Boogie's talented, and I think even if it's just to help screw with the Pelicans in their negotiations, to at least put on the face or the front that they're looking at Boogie. But the whole protected pick point you made was also good, because that's one of the things I thought about after the whole Doncic trade went down, was that, you know, now it's top five protected and Boogie's going to miss half the season. So they're either going to somehow be suddenly way better than they were last year without him, or without Cousins as he gets back and they can make the playoffs once Cousins does return, or Boogie coming back maybe pushes them out of contention to keep their pick and pushes them to the late lottery. And do they want that? But so, I mean, it's a question of whether or not you think that the, you know, how long-term do you view the Cousins signing for them? There's a lot of moving parts, obviously, but whether or not Cousins fits in the locker room is a consideration, but I'm not sure it's the main consideration when we talk about his Boogie's leverage and where he might go.
Yeah, I'm with you, though. If they want to give him a four-year max, go right ahead. More power to them. I think in that situation, I would try to slide him some cash in a small contract to generate a massive trade exception. Mm. That would be the ideal there. But four-year max, if they want to do that, go ahead. At this juncture, I don't feel like any team should be comfortable handing that out to DeMarcus, and that's solely because of injury. I'm not even talking about the other issues.
Yep, 100%.
So that is what it is. If Boogie were to walk, what would you like to see the Pelicans do?
Well, I think, I mean, your trade exception point's a good starting place so they can, have the bandwidth to sign someone. Because they're going to have to be, I mean, you've spoken about this, so it's got to be, they've got to operate over the cap unless they want to shed a ton of salary, which I don't see that happening. I don't think you lose Boogie and then you waste the first round pick to dump Solomon Hill on top. I just don't see that as a scenario. But I mean, I think you're probably not going to find a stud unless obviously the LeBron billboard works to perfection. But I think
keeps a collection of billboards, like the pictures of him on his phone. And so when he's going to make the free agency decision, he's just going to see who had the best design. And yep. I think by far we're winning that.
Yeah, that's how I would make my free agent decisions for sure.
That's the best way to do it.
But I think you go middle of the road. I mean, they need wings. That hasn't changed for years. you could see it really exacerbated in the Warriors series. Like they were forced to play Solomon Hill, who probably still was not 100% back from his hamstring injury, pretty real minutes to try to cover all the length on the floor for the Warriors, and clearly didn't work out very well. So not that it would have worked out well for anyone really, but yeah, I mean, I think that's you've got to look at where you can upgrade on the wings. I mean, there are options. I mean, Rudy Gay opted out.
you can get another guy who has a torn Achilles.
But at least we know he's back now.
The torn Achilles like Infinity Stones.
Yeah, I mean, there's Ariza who's been in New Orleans before, but he's not getting any younger. And so I think that's a danger.
He was looking for $50 to $60 million.
Yeah, it's a joke. I mean, I a lot of players,
which like you know, that. Like as a player going into free agency, you wanna highball it. You don't wanna ever say like, hey, I'm actually looking for the minimum contract. Thanks, guys. Please give me your best offers.
Yeah, for a guy who just turned 32, I see him
getting the MLE from some team.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. I mean, I think that's what Rudy Gay expects too, because he opted out of about that same amount of salary. I think it was like $9 million.
Some team will give Ariza the MLE just to take him away from the Rockets.
Yep, makes that. I mean, I'm not sure who does it, but there will be teams
like. I bet the Warriors would offer that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're their tax situation. They probably can. They have to do the taxpayer MLE, but there'd definitely be teams.
Yeah. I think that's where you have to look first.
You don't believe in Solomon Hill?
I waited a long time before I got off the Solomon Hill train, just because, I mean, from a lineup numbers perspective, the year before this one, when he was fully healthy for the year, he helped that defense, and I still think he can. Just the question is he back 100% to the guy he was defensively a couple of years ago, and then B, can he make any sort of tangible improvements on offense? Because we just haven't seen it. So when you're talking about a guy who's kind of going through his prime years and he hasn't really made any strides offensively, that's a problem. And so if you have him under contract, you got to figure out how to use him the best way possible. And he can still be a serviceable player for you, but I mean, he should absolutely not be getting the minutes that he got for the Pelicans during his first season in New Orleans.
Yeah, I feel like there's a large contingent of Pelicans fans who are just absolute fans of him, and it's a bit perplexing because
where do these people exist?
I was on Twitter and I was tweeting some crap about LeBron, and I was like, yeah, you know, LeBron's coming to New Orleans, and you know, trying to rile up the fan base. And some guy's like, SMH, you guys are doubting Solomon Hill. He's going to come back better than ever. And you guys need to quit sleeping on him. And I was like, bro,
now we know where his burner account lies.
but like for real, there's a fair number of people who are like, yeah, I believe in Solomon Hill. And it's like, that's awesome. I think Solo Hill is at his best, I think he's a really good defender. I think he gives you that wing defender that a team needs to compete in the NBA. I just don't think his defense offsets his lack of offense. Mm-hmm. Not yet. I don't think he can hit the three consistently for it to offset. I don't think he's Roberson level good enough at defense to let it go. And I think the thing is, like, Roberson does other things. Roberson's a pretty good rebounder himself. And he sets great screens. OKC often uses him as the role man, as a screen setter. And I don't think Solomon Hill is that good at that role yet. I think ideally he'll be playing a small ball for precision on this team, but I feel like there's just better options.
Yeah, the biggest loss when we traded Omer was his ability to set screens and clearly teach everyone else on the team how to set good screens, because that was clearly something he was doing frequently in practice, as you can tell by the rest of the roster. But
no one sets screens on this team well. No one.
Nope.
35-year-old Emeka Okafor, best screen setter on the team.
You do what you got to do to stay in the league really and stay relevant.
Like, he is like probably one of the top five screen setters in the league. Like, I saw some of the screens he set this year, and the guys just collapsed when they hit him.
Yeah. You just reminded me of there. I'll never in my life remember seeing a better screen in person than in the. I think it was no, it wasn't a playoff game, but it was Hornets Lakers towards the end of the CP3 tenure, and Aaron Gray just absolutely ended the life of Derek Fisher, and it was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Well, probably the greatest thing Aaron Gray's on the basketball floor, but it was I can't remember any, ever seeing a better. Better screen for New Orleans than that one, just because of who it was between a guy who definitely had like over 100 pounds on Fisher, and Fisher's like a pretty built dude himself, and he
Fisher's stocky.
Yeah, he just bit it, and it was hilarious. But I don't even know if Aaron Gray is a good screen setter. He probably wasn't, but like just the perfect storm happened, and Derek Fisher just fell. And so he's no Omer, but it was that was a fun thing to watch from the old school Hornets.
Old school Hornets. Okay, so kind of looking forward and around the league, a lot of the Western Conference teams, they had fairly decent drafts. The Clippers had 2 picks. The Nuggets got Michael Porter Jr., who it's unclear if he'll play this year. A lot of these teams are tooling up to make a bigger and better push in the playoffs, right? That includes teams that already made the playoffs, but also teams on the bubble. And obviously the Lakers are trying to gear up and land as many stars as they want. We're looking at a West that is potentially 12 to 13 deep to start the year, at least, you know, before teams start trailing off towards the deadline. Do you think if the Pelicans, all they do is sign Boogie and they round out the edges with their exceptions, do you think that's enough to sort of maintain their spot in the Western Conference?
I do. Are we talking just make the playoffs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I mean, it feels like it's easy to say, but because of all your points and the fact that the ninth seed won 46 games last year, and so like it's definitely not a shoo-in.
Yeah. So the Clippers they won 46 and they had they were the 10th seed, right?
Yeah, they won 42.
Yeah, and they still had a winning record. Plus, they had a boatload of injuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and like let's be honest, most of those teams had injuries. I mean, clearly the Pelicans with Boogie. Utah had Gobert go down for a little while, and then I mean Minnesota, Jimmy Butler, all those teams, Millsap for the Nuggets, we all had injuries, but yeah, the Clippers were probably a different beast, but they brought it on themselves with some of those players they signed.
Yeah,
I mean Gallinari, you have to expect it, unfortunately. Teodosic, you didn't know, but he. Or I would at least don't know his injury history, but he missed a lot, and the Beverly thing sucked too. But so I mean, there's just no reason to think that they'll be any more healthy next year, I think, than they were this year. Of course, their roster might look very different. We'll see.
Yeah. Do you think the Pelicans, with regards to the tax, are going to make moves to do what they can to stay under it?
In most scenarios, yeah. I mean, I don't think we have, based on just recent history, I don't think we have any reason to assume they're going to be a tax team, clearly.
So does that mean attaching assets to Ajinsa or Solomon to just get them out of here, get that salary offloaded?
I think so. I mean, it kind of stinks, but it's the reality that we live in. And I assuming that just bringing the core back takes us into a tax, which I believe it should. Yeah, they got to figure out a way to get under, whether it's a Ginza, whether it's hopefully a Ginza gets Pelicans under. I feel like he hopefully should, as long as the other contracts like the Rondos of the world don't provide a problem. But I mean, yeah, I mean, do you see it differently? Do you think there's any way that the Pelicans are a tax team without bringing in some sort of superstar?
I think the Pelicans wait until the last possible moment to commit one way or the other. I think that they want to...
So the trade deadline is what you're saying?
Yeah, about the deadline. Because the tax isn't calculated until the end of the year.
Right.
And they have a little bit of wiggle room towards the deadline to make moves, to offset some salary, to get under where they need to get to. And obviously this is a different story if you don't bring in Boogie, because then your calculations are a lot easier, actually.
Yeah.
But if you have Boogie, I think, you know, they hold out until the last possible moment, see if they can bring in any additional star-level talent. And you never know what star might be on the market towards the deadline. And the Pelicans have a bunch of expirings. And even if they, you know, interchange those expirings with other minimum-level contracts that they sign this summer, they'll still have a good bit of money that they can send out to a team that, you know, if they decide to trade a star, they can get all these expirings and they'll be off the books at the end of the year. So I think that sort of flexibility is something they leave themselves room for. In that same token, like in the summer, I don't see themselves hard capping based off a single player. I don't think there's a player in the free agent pool that is realistic, that is worth hard capping for. And on the flip side, I also don't think there's a guy that they're going to sign and trade for that will trigger the hard cap. I mean, unless you're talking like they're bringing in maybe like an Aaron Gordon, and they're like, okay, you know, Aaron Gordon signing like a $16 million per year deal, and we're sending out like, I don't know, like Etuan and Alexi and a pick or something to Orlando to make the trade work. Unless something like that happens and they trigger the hard cap that way, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely with you. I also the waiting to the last minute makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's, and just looking at the numbers, it's going to be interesting to see like every million saved. If assuming they bring back Cousins, every million under the max saved will really go a long way as it relates to the tax implications for this team. So, I mean, obviously, if you really want Cousins and you can get him on a length of a contract that is appealing, I don't think they should mess around the edges too much if it risks losing him. If you say you can get him for 2 years, but if we're talking more of like a 3-year deal, I think you've got to play serious hardball and try to get as far below the max money as you can for the sake of the tax implications and what it will mean for the roster this year.
I think Jason had a really good piece about how to maybe structure the Boogie deal to where it looks like a max, but it might not be a max because of incentives. Mm-hmm. And that may be a way to skirt around the tax. And if you guys haven't given it a read, it's on the website. It's on bourbonstreetshots.com. And it's a bit of the piece is out there. I don't think it's for everyone because it gets deep into the weeds of cap stuff. And it explores some rules like base year compensation that a lot of people are not familiar with. And so give it a read. It can be a lot to sort of work through. But Jason is a really smart man, smarter than myself by a good bit. And when he says something about the cap, you best listen to it.
Yep. I think you and I both have learned more from him than maybe most, like all the standard cap follows that people have on Twitter. And there are a lot of smart people out there as it relates to the cap, but I think having him as a resource is just, can't say enough about it.
Yeah, he's in his accessibility is obviously such a strong point in his favor compared to the other cap follows. But sure. His also ability to sort of break it down and tell you why. He's an educator, so he's really good at teaching you. Okay, so we're getting towards the end. I'm going to hit you with some rapid-fire questions. They may not be so rapid-fire, but off the top of your head, LeBron, where's he going?
So I think if I had to pick one team right now, I think it's L.A.
Wrong. It's N-O-L-A.
You were just way too ready for that.
That's right. Okay, why L.A.?
One, because the Vegas odds are overwhelmingly in favor of LA, which I did not expect at this point. I think they changed a couple days ago. So my gut's going with what Vegas says. And I think, I mean, the key domino here, which is weird because usually LeBron's the key domino, but I think now Kawhi's the key domino, is can the Lakers put together a trade, and will Popovich do it, a trade for Kawhi to the Lakers? I think that makes it a guarantee that LeBron goes to LA. Otherwise, I think I don't want to say it's a toss up, but I think there are other possibilities. LeBron could decide to stay with Cleveland. He could decide to stay in the Eastern Conference. I mean, it's tough to say, but LA. The Kawhi Leonard situation is the key domino, I think.
Okay. And then since you mentioned Kawhi, there's been reports, a lot of reports coming out that Popovich and team refuse to trade him to anyone in the West. They're telling people in the West to pound salt, tell them to kick rocks. So, I mean, I think that depresses the market for Kawhi, because then you have half the league that you can only send him to. And then that half the league knows that you can't send him to the other team, so they're going to lowball you on their offers. So it seems like a stupid thing to advertise.
And then Kawhi may not even stay.
Right. Kawhi may not even stay. So it's like, I would absolutely hate it if some team like Boston or Philly got him for dirt cheap because the Spurs were just like, we're not sending him west. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like if he's not going to LA, hey, awesome.
Yep. Yeah, it's tough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, and
no, yeah, go ahead.
I especially given Pop's where he's at in his career, like it sounds like he's not going to coach too much longer than he is than where he's at now. And so if that's the case, I mean, if you're Pop, do you not just, you obviously don't want to enable a super team, and that's definitely what could happen. If the dominoes would fall right into line if you traded Kawhi to the Lakers, because then Paul George and LeBron could both go over to LA. They can make the space for it, and so that's a disaster. But apart from that, I mean, if you're Pop, aren't you just trying to – they're not rebuilding. I mean, we saw Kawhi missed all but 9 games last year, and the Spurs still made the playoffs. So I my assumption is that maybe they get a pick out of it, but I think what they want is guys that can help the Spurs now. And that's what I feel like if I'm Pop, that's what I would want if I'm reaching my last stage of my coaching career, and he makes all the personnel decisions anyway, or most of them. So yeah, I mean, it's tough. I'm not sure what he's going to do. I get the not wanting to trade him in conference, but I also think that if he can get more from a team in the West to help his Spurs stay relevant, ideally, if it's not the Lakers, and it's a team without cap space that can't go out and get even more to pair with him, I think that has to still be an option in the Spurs' mind. So I don't think it should be just a blackball any team in the Western Conference.
If Pop calls and he decides he does want to trade Kawhi to the Western Conference, but he's like, I want Drew and I want a pick, and you have no assurances of Kawhi sticking around, you do the trade.
Man. This is harsh. Drew's came off the best year of his career, and now we're talking about trading him. I think it's not an easy answer, yes or no, which I think says something right then and there. But you have to think long and hard about it. I mean, you're giving him the chance to pair with Anthony Davis, which hopefully should be a nice sticking point. And also, I think one thing that is people don't really want to talk about is that Drew contract looks fine right now. I don't think it's ever going to look like a bargain. So at best, it's fair to maybe a slight deal.
Also, it's a flat contract. So if the cap keeps rising at an okay rate, it'll look better as it goes on.
Yeah, I think it jumps in the last year. But I think, for years 2 through 4. Yeah. So it's like this. It's level for years 2 through 4 and then jumps about $1 million in the last year. But it's also a player option. You got to consider it because, that contract – I mean, if Drew isn't as good next year as he was this year, like suddenly people start to question the contract again, and so you just never know. And so I mean, that's a lot of money to have tied up in one player. I obviously love Drew as a player right now, and I want him to stay a Pelican until he retires. But if you got a chance to add Kawhi and you think that you can convince him to stick around, you got to consider it.
I think it's a no-brainer. I love Drew. Really? I love Drew. Drew's the best. Drew's my top 2 favorite player in the league, probably. I don't know. Drew's really good. I make highlights of him. I'm obsessed with Drew. Hi, Drew. But Kawhi is a top 2 player, top 3 player maybe, when he's totally healthy, right?
He hasn't played again, man.
That's the only thing. My only hitch would be the health. If I have total assurances of his health, he's going to play 70-plus games unless something else goes wrong. Next season, but or not 70 plus games, his current issue is not going to bother him for the next season. If I have total assurance of that, I make the trade in a heartbeat. You're pairing 2 MVP caliber players together. You're pairing 2 defensive player of the year caliber players together. You're adding a position of extreme need, especially in this league. I think it's a no-brainer. I think with that type of talent, if that's the cost to acquire it, you do it. And it's easier to fill the edges out with guards. Etwan would be a fine fit there. You could probably still play Rondo at point guard. And also, you could also pursue guys in the free agency because guards are just more in demand. I mean, not more in demand, more available, less in demand. And I think they're easier to acquire. They're also easier to acquire in a trade. So let's just say it's easier to get a player that fills Drew's position, not what Drew does, because it's hard to replace first team all defense, but than it is to get someone that does what Kawhi does, because we've been trying to get any workable wing, period, for years.
Yeah, That's fair. I think this just comes down to what the percent chance you think. Like, what would the So what would the threshold be for you? Like, what percent chance would you need for Kawhi to re-sign for you to make that trade? Is it? I mean, I don't know. Like, that's my sticking point. Is that I just, based on everything I've heard about Kawhi and what he wants, like, I just don't think the Pelicans, barring like some sort of crazy playoff run, I just don't think he sticks around. And that's what does it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's tough. I think I just want, for me, the threshold wouldn't be that high. It'd just be like, I want a fair chance. I want you to listen to my offer in free agency, and we're going to throw down the 5-year, we're going to throw down the 5-year extension for you, the full max, and this is it. And plus, you know, we hear things about Kawhi not wanting to be the guy in the spotlight, and it's easy to hide behind AD. AD will absorb all of that, plus the media here is super friendly. I'm definitely not patting myself on the back. I think outside of L.A., because I think, you know, you hear about Kawhi wanting L.A., this would be a fair spot if he wants the most amount of money he can possibly get. I don't need that much of a reinsurance. If he was, like, absolutely, like, I'm not going to sign 100%, well, that throws a wrench in things. I probably won't do it. But if it's like Boogie, where he's just trying to tell people that to scare people off, but he's keeping his options open, sure, I make that trade, no question.
Yeah, and I know. It's just that it makes it sound like – so he mentioned both L.A. teams, which is what's kind of what scared me, is that like, oh, I just want to go to L.A. It's like, oh, okay. Like,
but Paul George said that, and now there's like rumors about how Paul George
said the Lakers. I don't think Paul George ever said he wanted to go to the Clippers.
I think he grew up a Clippers fan. I may be making that up.
I'm not sure. Well, citation so needed. Another question with this whole Kawhi scenario is: what do you do with Cousins if you can? Assuming you make that trade, which is obviously, you know, low chance anyway. But assuming you make that trade, what's up with Boogie?
Honestly, then I trade him for pieces. Then I trade him for an Otto Porter. Yep. You know, then I trade him for whoever's on the market. Like, if you can get a CJ McCollum out of him, then hell yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think. I mean, obviously, if you keep Boogie, it's a pretty terrifying front court with Kawhi, AD, and Boogie. That sheer amount of size and skill, there's zero teams in the league equipped to handle that. Zero. But I think you could probably get some really nice pieces that fit together better and some guys that may need the ball less and to just round out your team, because you'll be in a difficult spot to fill the team around the edges, and you'll need to rely on veterans and other players taking discounts, which is tough in a market like New Orleans. So, I'd pursue a trade. Otto Porter or CJ McCollum would be nuts.
Yeah, I don't think they're getting CJ for a Boogie. I think Porter is more realistic, but I think and I agree with you, I would do that, but my rationale also bakes in the locker room stuff. It's like if you're trying to make your 1-year pitch to Kawhi Leonard to stick around.
Yeah.
And we've heard some of the things we've heard about Boogie in the locker room and the team maybe gelling more off the floor without him. I think it's very, you're playing with fire to have him there. I mean, granted, again, all this goes out the window if the Pelicans are competing for a championship, because winning matters most. But like if the team is, you know, gets maybe one round closer, or when I don't know, it like makes a close series
court,
out of,
you know, you get home court, and then you play against a team that is, you're supposed to be worse than you, which in the West is never exactly true.
Yeah,
and then you have a better path to the Western Conference Finals.
Right, and so like I don't know, like it's still it's just hearing the things we've heard. Like I would love to keep Boogie with those two guys for basketball reasons, or like as you said, if you can flip him for a guy who makes more sense with the roster, that like I would also, you know, be into something like that. But you know, the stuff that you hear about, you know, how the team, you know, went out to dinner all the time now and like was like just gelled way better without Boogie around, that it's scary, especially if you're thinking about trying to convince a guy who wants to go to LA to stay in New Orleans through the prime years of his career. So it's just, you got to think about all these things.
Agreed. Well, I think that's probably a good note to end the podcast on, to a little bit of hope. We're definitely not getting Kawhi, but you know, It's fun to dream about.
Because we're getting LeBron. That's why.
Duh. It's positional redundancy. We don't need that.
God. Okay. Yeah, it's time to stop now.
Okay. All right. But no, guys, thanks for listening. Keep giving us a shot. It's going to take us some time to get good at this. We tried it once before. A little secret here. We messed up. So be patient with us. Hopefully we can keep providing you some of the same things Ryan and Mac did, and hopefully we provide you some different things as well. So stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Shemit said, thanks everyone. Nowhere to go but up from here, as we keep developing our podcast chemistry and continue to take our shots, take our at bats. So looking forward to continuing this and keeping in touch with all the great Bourbon Street Shots and Pelicans fans out there. So keep giving us feedback. Tell us what you want to hear more of or what you don't want to hear us talk about at all. So again, thanks, and looking forward to doing this again soon.